Welcome to the Gospel of Everything podcast, where we consider everything in the light of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I am your host, John Davis. On this show, we do not obsess over the end of the world, but rather we are looking to see the glory of God show up in every area of our lives. We are not waiting to go down in glorious defeat. We are expecting to win. Welcome back, victorious kingdom ambassadors. Welcome to the Gospel of Everything podcast. I am John Davis, your host and chief talker. I'm looking forward to sharing with you today something that will change and empower your life. The Gospel of Everything podcast is where we consider all of life in the light of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and where we are looking to inspire, connect with, and mobilize you, my fellow victorious kingdom ambassadors. What is a victorious kingdom ambassador? Someone who is not looking obsessively for the end of the world, but rather is looking to bring God's kingdom more and more into the world, both now and in eternity. Someone who is not looking to change the world by humanistic, man-made ideas, but rather by embracing God's revelation and everything that flows from it. Someone who is not looking to be saved by another political government scheme, but rather is looking to be saved by Christ and then expecting to live out Christ in every area of life. Please take a moment to pause and subscribe to this podcast in your favorite app before moving on to make sure that you never miss an episode. So I want to talk to you today and hopefully inspire you to see Christianity and see the kingdom of God and its advancement in the earth as a multi-generational enterprise. And I want to start by talking to you about a problem that I had when I was younger. I went off and joined a missions organization called Youth with a Mission. And one of the things that can happen to you when you get involved with short-term missions trips, like I was doing, is someone could say, it's your turn, go stand up in front of this crowd and tell your testimony. So I remember having to do that, stand up in front of the crowd and tell my testimony. Only I felt like my testimony was kind of boring, like I kind of didn't have much to say. Like, what am I going to say? What did I learn from the Bible recently? I felt like people were expecting, you know, I used to do drugs and I used to drink and party and sleep with prostitutes and be involved with crime, and I just have this horrific story followed by an amazing run down the aisle at a crusade where I got connected with Jesus and finally I was saved and now I'm not going to hell anymore. I'm going to heaven and God can do that for you too. This is what I kind of felt like my testimony was supposed to be. But I was kind of more like a boring nerd in school and, relatively speaking, lived a rather, what I thought at the time, was a boring life. It was a relatively problem-free life, although as I got older, I began to realize there were actually some very serious issues in my story, so I don't want to misrepresent myself there. But I had to solve this problem, and I eventually did solve this problem when I realized my mother's story is the beginning of my story, and that my testimony is actually a testimony not just of how God changed my life, but how he came into my family's life. So my mother grew up pretty much in a godless home. I'm not trying to criticize anyone there, but she was not really exposed to Jesus or the gospel or all of the good fruits and things that come from that. And when she got older, she eventually married my dad, only he was previously married to somebody else. So she felt very much that her involvement with my dad was a part of the breakup of his first marriage. And my dad had three beautiful daughters with his first marriage. So as you can imagine, there's great consequences and tragedy to this event. But as she was living with my dad, whom she married, she watched the Planet of the Apes, of all things, and began to become terrified of the future. And at some point, God began to make her afraid of hell. She became terrified that she was going to hell, and she believed, especially because of breaking up this marriage, that she deserved it. But something was drawing her, And eventually a couple of guys knocked on her door, and I believe they were actually from a group that was at the time a Christian cult. But they came in and witnessed to her and told her about Jesus. This was all happening when I was very young. I had been born, but I was very young. Something you need to know, before she encountered these guys that came and witnessed to her, when I was 1 year old, she took me to a church and asked them, hey, can I do a child baptism? And they said, well, we don't do child baptisms here, but we do baby dedications. So she took me to a church, even though she was not a Christian and had no God in her life and no knowledge of God, and had me dedicated to the Lord when I was 1 year old. Really, the beginning of my Christian story. But when I was 1.5, she encountered the two guys that I was starting to tell you about, who came to her door and witnessed to her about Jesus. And she, even though they were in some error, she gave her life to Jesus and began to read the Bible for herself. And when they came back later, she was disputing with them about some of the things they were teaching. So she got very serious about the Lord very quickly. When I was 4 years old, my mother led me to the Lord. Now, my mother was a very imperfect woman. And by the way, I mean, she died in this last December after living a long Christian life. But she was imperfect. And I've noticed that I've been saying that a lot when I talk about her. Why do I keep saying she's imperfect? Well, one of the reasons I bring that up a lot, and I'm going to bring it up in this episode, is because I want you to believe that what God is doing in your life can be the continuation of and or the beginning of and the increase of a legacy for the future. Not a perfect legacy. It is not possible. It's too late for you and me to have a perfect legacy. We've already sinned. We've already harmed others. We've already done things that have brought bad things into the world. But because of the grace of God, you and I can leave a legacy. And that's the story of my mother. And that's where I learned my own testimony. I had to learn what was her story. How did the gospel come into my life? With all of the troubles I've had in my life is better than it would have been if Jesus had not come into my mother's life. This is the beginning of a legacy. So this is a story of an imperfect woman, okay? Let me tell you some things that I learned at her memorial service in January of this year. I learned that there were some people that felt that when she became a Christian, she stopped being fun or being happy, which from knowing my mother, I can see why that would happen, because she was really had been, her story was being afraid of hell and not wanting to go there. And that's why she got born again. Which is interesting because she went through that. I actually never did. I don't ever really remembering a time of not being aware of salvation and aware of God. I know because she has told me, and I think maybe I've observed in a couple places, that there are people in the world who feel hurt because of her and may be using that as their excuse to reject the gospel of Jesus Christ. She once told me about how she wouldn't buy some Girl Scout cookies because she was concerned about the Girl Scouts and from a neighbor girl that was selling them door to door. And she later said she regretted that because she wished she had just loved the girl and just bought the cookies for the sake of that little girl, right? So I'm just saying that she does not have a perfect legacy because, only Jesus has a perfect legacy. However, there are countless more people who have been impacted. One of the things I noticed moving around the area growing up as a young Christian was I could hardly meet somebody or visit a church or encounter other Christians that had not in some way encountered my mother. She was very much talked to and related to a lot of people. Many people in her family were either directly or indirectly led towards becoming born again themselves because of my mother's story. My perception has always been that she was kind of the main impact of how Jesus came into both her family's life and my father's family's life. I recently asked some relatives to help me, know if I'm understanding that story right, and they began to tell me about my grandmother, who was a Methodist. Now, I was not personally directly influenced by her faith. I did not even know that my grandmother had any faith. I'm still not 100% sure I understand that. Near the end of my grandfather's life, I actually had written him a letter saying, please tell me, what is your story regarding God? I'm not accusing you of not knowing God or not being a Christian. I just like to hear, so I know your story. But as is always the case, when Jesus comes into a family or comes into someone's life, there's usually been multiple influences. So there is some heritage and legacy coming from my grandmother on my father's side. My mother used to tell me about my great-grandmother that she believed she was a praying woman. So I don't know what influences there were. I don't want to elevate my mother to sainthood here. I mean, we're all saints in the kingdom, but all of us who believe in Jesus. But what I mean is I'm not trying to glorify her. In fact, by looking at her flaws and her weaknesses and seeing how much she impacted people, I'm hoping that will give you hope that you too can leave a legacy. You can leave a legacy with your children, however imperfect. You can leave a legacy with the next generation, with the young people at your church, with the people you work with. You can leave a legacy. My mother was a key element of bringing the gospel into her family. And for me, if it only affected me, it was all worth it. Because I cannot imagine what my life would have been like without God. I haven't had a perfect life. I have not had a pain-free life. In fact, I've had a lot of pain. And it took me a long time to realize that I actually had a lot of trauma. It just wasn't of the stereotypical aggressive type. It was a different kind of trauma. But I know that because God was present in my life through no act of my own, my life is very different than it would have been. I don't know what I would have become if God had not entered life, my life, through my mother's story. Here's just some thoughts of some things that are in my life because of the legacy of the gospel coming into my mother's life. I have had some awareness and connection with God for my entire conscious life that I can remember. I've not always had perfect faith. I've had seasons of doubt. I had great seasons of doubt in my early years in high school. But never was I just unconscious or unaware or without God at all. I think this is probably a lot of people's story, by the way. A lot of people even that don't see themselves as Christians, but they have some sort of a Christian heritage, someone who influenced them, witnessed to them, loved them in the name of Jesus. And then there are people who literally have nothing, right? That nothing of God came into their life like my mother had been. But I grew up with an awareness of God, the ideas of God, ideas of the Bible, and basically kind of relating and connecting to God to some degree for my entire conscious life. And apparently I was a young evangelist. My mother told me that I used to walk up to my dad, who was not a Christian when I was young, and say, Daddy, do you know Jesus yet? So the missionary heritage was already born. And I don't feel like, talk about privilege. I am so privileged to have had the gospel come into my life. And I, in a way, I didn't make a choice for the gospel to come into my life. I mean, I decided to follow Jesus, but I did not make a choice. This is a heritage. This is an inheritance. This is a legacy. I grew up in the presence of worship, people singing love songs to God at church. I grew up in the presence of Bible teaching. I was given many foundations of Christian thought through an imperfect Christian school. I was from second grade through all the way through junior high. I attended a private Christian school, a very small private Christian school, not like an elite, academy for the wealthy type private school, a small church school. And I emphasize imperfect because the people there impacted me in spite of any imperfections they may have had. I heard the ideas of the kingdom. I learned history imperfectly from a Christian perspective. I even learned science and math from a Christian perspective. I learned literature from a Christian perspective. All this, I learned just to memorize the Bible. We had to memorize Bible verses and come in and read them. I learned all this and was impacted by all these things through no choice of my own. This is just free sowing into my life that I received because of a legacy from what God did in someone else's life. I grew up influenced by Christian men who were serious about following God and who were serious about thinking like a Christian. I was exposed to a pastor. Denny is his name. And I witnessed him be committed to service and principle, and very much a stubborn man in a good sense, in his pursuit of God and his pursuit of leading and serving the church through all kinds of obstacles and opposition. An imperfect man? Yes, of course. Of course he's an imperfect man. But I watched a man hold on, you know, white-knuckled to God, no matter what awful things came his way. This is a heritage, an inheritance for me. So I received a Christian education, Bible memorization, exposure to Christian ideas, examples of Christian character. There were key people that influenced me that probably don't even know the level of influence they had on me as a young man. I'm thinking of a guy named Bob who he just led the Sunday school sometimes. He took us on a camping expedition once up in Michigan in the Upper Peninsula. He spent a lot of time with me, had me over to his house to spend time with him. And I remember him. He was one of the teachers that he didn't just tell us a lesson. He asked us questions and we had to struggle through a Bible passage where he led us through the struggle to figure out what does this mean? You know, and he didn't just tell us. He began a process that was a big part of developing my mind and studying the Bible for myself. There was another guy named Fred who was really into being a radical Christian, which for those of you who think radical only in terms of like political extremism, we don't mean anything like that in this context of talking about a radical Christian. We mean someone who's all in, someone who's like a total Christian, all in following God. It's not just a part of their life. Jesus is our whole life. But he was the youth pastor at the church I grew up at for a while. There was a guy named Andy who was a part of that church and a part of the Christian school, and he was also a camp counselor at the Christian camp that I went to, who taught me, well, first of all, he was a great and fun camp counselor with great and scary stories at night, but he also taught me how to do an inductive Bible study when I was only in fifth grade. So an idea that some people aren't ever exposed to, I learned and had to do in my journals an inductive Bible study in fifth grade. When I later went to a school that spent 10 months of inductive Bible study, I had a great advantage because I already understood what it was and the basics of how to do it and was able to just learn a more advanced way. A guy named Bob, who was the principal at my school, the Christian school, he simply spent time with me. He basically treated me like I was special and intelligent. We played chess. I remember one time in playing chess, I came in and beat someone in four moves with a famous four-move, you know, fool's mate, and he wrote it all on the board and made everyone see it. But he was an imperfect man, still is. But you know what? He affirmed my intelligence and my potential, and he spent time with me and affirmed me in who I was. Several of these men simply spent lots of quality time with me, which I realized later, I didn't know then, is kind of one of my love languages. If you've ever heard of the five love languages, one of my love languages, probably the main one, is quality time. You never know who you're influencing. This is one of the messages I want to get across to you today. You never know who you're influencing. You might be speaking someone's love language and you don't know it, they don't know it. But these men took the time to just be with me, talk to me. It was Bob who, when I went through my season of doubt, trying to understand, is Christianity really true? Or is it just, I only believe this because of my heritage and my legacy, who challenged me to read Josh McDowell and read Gary Habermas and read other things. And my mother challenged me to read Francis Schaeffer. And I read these things and I had someone there. They didn't have all the answers. They didn't answer them perfectly or tell me all the answers to the universe, but they gave me a path to follow. They were there. They were available. So I want you to look at your life and realize that you can leave a legacy. You never know who you're influencing. Stop beating yourself up for your imperfect legacy and influence people. Serve. Just be available. Be available to your kids. Be available to young people. Serve however God leads you to serve. But I want to bounce off this into a broader, bigger picture. I wanted to start with just the, you know, the simple level. But I want to move to a higher level and talk about the multi-generational nature of Christianity. I want to use this story of my legacy that I received from others. I didn't earn it. I received it as a gift from the people that went before me. And just as I received from my mother, I want to inspire you to see the advancement of the knowledge of God and the kingdom of God as a multi-generational endeavor. Multi-generational Christianity. The kingdom of God is a multi-generational Christian endeavor. If you look into your mind and into the minds around you, I believe you will observe something that I've been talking about in previous episodes, an attitude and perspective that history is on some kind of permanent downward trend, and that is the only option. Things are getting worse. Oh, look at the bad things going on in the world today. But it seems that nobody pauses and asks the question, if everything always is getting worse, if everything always is going downhill, how did the good stuff get there in the first place? How did, you know, those of us who still believe there was some element of God's hand working in America that brought things like freedom into the world on a whole new level, political freedom, religious freedom, where did that come from? Where did it come from? Did it just come out of the blue? Did we start there and things have been declining ever since? I mean, didn't there used to be a world where people like the Assyrians would stick hooks through your jaw and drag you off as prisoners? Didn't there used to be a world where empire kept rising against empire in a level of brutality that we hardly see today? Didn't the world used to be only about power? Has there not been anything where there's been a progress in the world? Where did that progress come from? How did it happen? So I want you to consider this question. Whenever you see something good that you feel is being lost, or you feel is going downhill, and it very well might be going downhill, but where did it come from in the first place? How did it get there? How did we get Christian revivals, Christianized culture, partly Christianized culture, if you've listened to my other episodes, Christian ideas of civil government that influenced, imperfectly, the societies that we have today? How did we get freedom and prosperity? And why, oh why, if all this has been done before, why can't it be done again? Why can't it be done even better and at even greater levels than before? It's this negative, poisonous attitude that believes that we're living in the end and it all has to go downhill, maybe. I don't know. That's at least one reason. Please listen to other episodes. I touch on that a lot. Once again, we see the consequences of a deeply ingrained negativity in Christian thought regarding the future on this side of Christ's bodily return. Pretty much all eschatologies believe in an ultimate victory, but do you have an eschatology that believes that there's victory available now? Our faith has been that the world must get worse, so obviously it's like we've forgotten where did the good things, in the midst of the imperfect, very, very imperfect and incomplete world, where do the good things come from? At some point in the past, somebody believed differently and lived out multi-generational Christianity. Somebody did it. The Puritans, for example, the Pilgrims, in all their imperfection, you can find endless efforts to disparage them and show their flaws, and you're always going to find flaws in any element of history. No matter how Christian it got, no matter how much good stuff happened, you're going to find flaws and sins and brokenness, okay? Because it's an impartial process. It's incomplete. But the Puritans believed that the kingdom could expand and would expand and thus lived out their lives in that way. And the generations that have gone before us in many ways have left us a legacy. I grew up in a world where we were left free to run around the neighborhood without any fear that something bad would happen to us. Not sure that's still true today, but that's the way it was. So look to your life and to your vision. Do you have a vision for the world around you that goes beyond your times? Do you have a multi-generational Christian kingdom vision? Do you believe that we can do things now that will make the future better for future generations? How much endless blessings are you and I experiencing because of a multi-generational Christianity that people lived out in the past? How many troubles are we inheriting because of some things that a previous generation did not take on? Let's talk about a bad example from the Bible on this. Hezekiah, King Hezekiah. King Hezekiah was basically in the process of learning about how judgment was coming on Israel, okay? So you can read this story in Isaiah, and this particular passage is in Isaiah chapter 39, verses 5 through 8. Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, "Hear the word of the Lord of hosts. Days are coming when all that is in your house and that which your ancestors have stored up until this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord. Some of your own sons who are born to you shall be taken away. They shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." Then Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "The word of the Lord that you have spoken is good." For he thought, "There will be peace and security in my days." So Hezekiah just found out that his sons were going to be carried away to a foreign land and made eunuchs. That the temple, the most holy place, the center of Israel, center of Israel's life and religion, was going to be plundered by a foreign country. But Hezekiah was okay with it because things were going to be good in his day. Take a good look at yourself and ask yourself, are you living that way? Are you living that way? Are you living saying, well, I grew up and it was a basically okay place to grow up? And maybe you weren't, but I know some of us, that's what we would say. Or maybe that's not your story, but some of us it is. And you know what? Just as, you know, I made it. I survived. Too bad for future generations. Is that you? Think about that. Whatever you are doing is not love. We're supposed to be living out love, right? It's not love unless we also consider the blessings or consequences for future generations in everything we do. I find in political conversations and debates, one thing that I don't encounter very often is a long-term view of the consequences of whatever we choose to do. And I debated whether to bring these up because I don't want to hijack the episode by these specific issues about which I may be right or wrong. But my point is, when we look at the issues that are facing our society, both politically and in other ways, we have to think through what are the long-term consequences. At the time of recording this episode, once again, due to a mass murder, we're debating about gun control and gun laws and all of that, which I'm not going to go into the details about that, but I will say, whatever view you're taking of that, are you looking at the long-term consequences? I find that people assume and presume that there's been some sort of human progress that will never be reversed and that we'll never have a time again where people will need weapons to defend themselves from an evil government, or they just, you know, belittle that possibility by how powerful the government is without looking at history, that things that have happened in the past. The same things for economics or the welfare state or Social Security. We're looking to now. We're looking to the next couple of decades or so when we have our discussion. Not very many people are talking about, are we going to preserve liberty for future generations? One of the reasons it is almost impossible to bring the needed real reforms in our society is because people want good things now, rather than living for a better future for future generations. I wonder how many of us or our parents are a story of parents who, you know, worked really hard at some miserable job in order to put their kids through school so that they could have a better future. Are we doing that? Are you doing that? Am I doing that? Now let's talk about a good example, the best example, Jesus himself. Jesus was always looking to the future. In Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, the Apostle Paul says this, whoever wrote, that's one possible author. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who, for the sake of the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. What was it that Jesus saw in the future that was so powerful and so beautiful that he was able to endure such horror as what he had to go through? He endured the cross, scorning its shame for the joy set before him. Do you think that's just talking about being resurrected? I bet that's included. But we know Jesus prayed not only for his disciples, but for those who would believe because of them. We know that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. There's a multi-generational aspect to this. God is obviously looking at everything long term. Jesus endured the shame, endured the cross and scorned the shame. The joy set before him is you and me in a world that glorifies him, a bride that is prepared. He sees the end game, and that end game gave him the courage and the endurance to go through horrific stuff because he saw a future. He was the pioneer of multi-generational. The Apostle Paul talked about in 2 Timothy, "What you have heard from me through many witnesses, entrust to faithful people who will be able to teach others as well." So you have four generations here. Paul teaching Timothy, instructing him to teach others who will be able to teach others. There's a multi-generational aspect to Christianity, both in our choices in confronting the evils of today. What if William Wilberforce had never confronted the issue of slavery? What if there had been no abolitionists in America? What if brave African descendants that fought against slavery and took actions to free themselves had never happened? Would we still live in a world where people owned slaves in America? What would have happened if someone made sacrifices in the past? Somebody did it. A couple of things that just pop into my mind, inspirational visions of the future, and they're, you know, I don't know how pure they are in their Christian background, but either way, you know, I always think of the song America the Beautiful. I was reading about the lady who wrote it, specifically trying to research, you know, what was her worldview? What was she about? But whatever it was, she captured something when she talked about, you know, "Oh, beautiful for patriots dream, who sees beyond the years, thine alabaster city's gleam undimmed by human tears." I don't know, was she a socialist or something? I don't know, but whatever it is, she had a vision for a multi-generational things getting better. What about the founding fathers who wrote into our founding documents about preserving the blessing of liberty for themselves and also for posterity? They were looking to the future. Now I have to pause and give you a warning here. Something that has come into the world as a result of Christianity, I think, is the counterfeits. Counterfeit Christianity, like socialism, Marxism, humanist visions for a bright future. This idea of multi-generational goodness being passed along has been borrowed and stolen by worldviews that are actually hostile to Christianity, and they've incorporated that. So I'm not saying every time somebody says something positive or encouraging about the future, or every time somebody says for our future generations, if they're not following God and his ways, they'll, with all, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Good intentions aren't enough. We need to base our love for future generations on truth. So I'm not going to go into that too much, but I just want to make you aware. Make sure that the multi-generational Christianity is multi-generational.